Anybody else? Would you like? No, you want to get. You want to leave early. Okay.
You all know me. I'm Louise Roberts, Professor Roberts' wife, and I've been asked to give you a paper which I had prepared on the home of Martin and Katie Luther. If there are no more questions, I hope I can finish in 30 minutes, and then we might have some discussion if you have any questions. After visiting Martin Luther in Wittenberg in 1536, the humanist Capitel sent the following thank you note to Luther. He said, "I hereby say farewell to your wife, Frau Catherine, the best wife. After my return, I'll send her something she is to wear to remember me." He sent a ring. "I love her with all my heart, for she has been created to keep up your health, so that you may serve the church born under you, that is, all that hope in Christ. She is deservedly esteemed, because as Hausfrau, she cares for our common teacher with gentleness and diligence." This gracious description of the home of Luther and of his marital happiness should inspire all of us. Certainly, Katharina von Bora brought order, efficiency, regularity, and financial management into the life of Martin Luther, so that as he aged, he was able to continue his work as a theologian, pastor, and leader of the Reformation. The home that Martin and Katie made together was full of love and full of people, as well as being physically very large. Luther expressed his own love and dependence upon her when he said that he thanked God for such a pious and true wife on whom the husband's heart can rely. This couple, who enjoyed 20 years and 8 months of married life together, must have grown in their love to one another. Shortly after his own marriage, Luther praised Katie, saying, "God be praised, for I have a pious, faithful wife in whom the husband's heart can trust, as Solomon says in Proverbs 31. My dear Lord, wedlock is not a natural thing, but a gift of God, the very sweetest, yes, chastest life above all celibacy." Who was this Katharina von Bora? You probably have heard that since she was born in January 1499, she was 16 years younger than Martin. Her family lived in Lippendorf, 3 miles south of Leipzig, and belonged to the knightly class. Katie had 3 brothers and a sister, but her mother died and her father remarried when she was only 6. She was placed in a Cistercian convent at age 9 and took her vows at 16. The abbess of the convent at Nimschen was Margarete von Haubitz, her mother's sister. This well-built stone convent had been established long before, in 1251. Katie probably enjoyed her life there and gladly served her aunt, learning the management of a large establishment and also living a prayerful and dutiful life. When Katie had served as a nun for 7 years, that is, in her 23rd year, she and the abbess and other nuns learned of Luther's teaching that salvation cannot be earned by monastic observances. They escaped from the convent in the canvas-covered wagon of Leonhard Koppe, a respectable merchant of Torgau who had supplied the cloister with foodstuffs. They arrived in Wittenberg on Tuesday, April 22, 1522, 2 days after Easter, and placed their future in the hands of Luther. Some of these ex-nuns returned to their homes, others hired out as governesses. Most eventually married, as they were expected to do. Since Catherine's father could not provide for her or family, she lived in Wittenberg in a private home, possibly that of the painter Lucas Cranach. At this time, Katie participated in the Latin classes at the home of Philip Melanchthon, which suggests that she was also quite literate. She did not discourage the attentions of Jerome Baumgartner of Nuremberg, but when his parents would not allow him to marry an ex-nun, Luther suggested Dr. Caspar Glatz to her, a Lutheran pastor. Catherine, however, called on Nicholas von Amsdorff, a leading professor at the university and run responsible for her well-being, and she complained that she could not marry Glatz because she detested him, and she did not want to be forced to marry him. She said, quote, "If Luther or Amsdorff were willing, she could arrange an honorable marriage with either, but never with Glatz." Amsdorf, of course, told Luther, who had not been thinking of marriage. He said in 1524, quote, I am in the hand of God, a creature whose heart he may change or rechange, may kill or make alive at any hour or any minute, but that hitherto I have not been and am not now inclined to take a wife. Not that I lack the feelings of a man, for I am neither wood nor stone, but my mind is averse to marriage, because I daily expect the death decreed to an heretic. He said this 2 years after Katie arrived in Wittenberg, and then there was her meeting with Amsdorf, and this was when Luther had already left the monastic life and assumed civilian clothes. Luther then went to God in prayer on the matter, saying, quote, a man must ask God for counsel and pray, and then act accordingly. And the answer was yes. And Luther immediately took steps to marry Catherine. He seems to have married her to express his conviction that the estate of marriage and not the life of monasticism was most pleasing to God. He wanted to live his teaching. Having determined to marry, Luther did not delay. He visited his parents in April 1525, and his father urged him to marry. And Luther said then, if I had not married quickly and secretly and taken few into my confidence, everyone would have cried out that he had done what he could to hinder me, for all my best friends cried, not this one, but another. The engagement and the wedding were both held on June 13, 1525, in the Black Cloister where Luther lived. Only a few close friends attended, and a breakfast banquet was served the next morning. They celebrated a more public ceremony 2 weeks later on June 27th with a service in the town church, a banquet in the Black Cloister, and a wedding dance. The pair was showered with gifts. Luther wrote the next year to a friend, quote, Katie sends greetings and thanks you for thinking her worthy of such a letter. She is well by the grace of God and is in all things more compliant, obedient, and obliging than I have dared to hope, thanks be to God. So that I would not exchange my poverty for the wealth of Croesus. Does this indicate that Luther had feared that she would not have been so compliant, obedient, and obliging? In addition to having a home of mutual love and assistance to each other, Martin and Katie Luther opened their home to what we would call an extended family, nieces, nephews, and aunts. The four sons and two daughters of Luther's sister and two other nephews came to live there, and also a great niece. An important member of the family was Aunt Lena, Katie's aunt, who had escaped from the cloister of Nimschau with Katie in 1522. A noble lady teacher, Margareta von Machau, also lived with them. And the marriage of Martin and Katharina von Bora was blessed with six children. Hans, the eldest, was born June 7, 1526, just a year after the wedding. He was baptized on the day of his birth in the town church of Wittenberg. The sponsors included Bugenhagen, pastor of the church, several other important citizens of Wittenberg, and the vice chancellor of the Elector of Saxony. Young Hans received presents from all over, and when he cut his first tooth at 6 months, all Germany heard of it. The following December, Katie gave birth to a second child, Elizabeth, who lived only 8 months. Luther wrote that her death gave him a very sick, effeminate heart, so much do I grieve over her. Another girl, Magdalena, was born in May 1529. 2 years later, another boy named Martin Hester, his father, born November 9. And in January 1533, son Paul was born. The youngest child, Margareta, was born in December 1534. Katie Luther has borne six children in 8 years. Luther loved his own children dearly, as those of you who have read his sermons and his table talk will recognize from the many references to them. One letter he wrote to his eldest son, Hans, when only four, shows how much Luther could enter into the world of childhood. He said, Grace and peace in Christ, my dear little son. I am happy to see that you are studying well and saying your prayers faithfully, at four, mind you. Continue, my dear son. When I come home, I will bring you a nice present. I know an attractive, pleasant garden full of little children who wear golden jackets and gather nice apples under the trees, and pears and cherries and purple and yellow plums. They sing and skip and are happy and have pretty little ponies with golden reins and silver saddles. Then I asked the owner of the garden whose children they were, to which he replied, "Dear man, they are the children who like to pray, who enjoy studying, and who are good." I said to the man, "Dear sir, I also have a son whose name is Hans Luther. Could he not also come into this garden that he might eat such nice apples and pears and ride such pretty ponies and play with the children?" And the man replied, "He can, provided he likes to pray, studies hard, and is very good. Phil and Justy may come with him, and they will have whistles, drums, and fife, and dance, and shoot with little bows and arrows." Next, the man showed me a nice lawn in the garden, all equipped for dancing, where golden whistles, fifes, and drums, and nice silver crossbows hung from the trees all over. But it was still so early in the day that the children had not yet eaten, and I could not wait to see them dance. So I said to the man, "My dear sir, I must immediately go and write my dear Hans about all this, that he may pray, study, and be a good boy, so he may also come into this garden. But he also has an Aunt Lena whom he must bring with him." The man replied, "Very well, go and tell him about it." "So, my little Hans, study and pray well, and tell Phil and Jesse to repeat their prayers and study also, for then you will enter the garden together. May God bless you. Give Aunt Lena my love and a kiss for me." In addition to the family itself, Martin and Katie Luther entertained many house guests. It was customary for university professors to offer board and room to students. The Elector of Saxony had fixed the price of such bursa at 30 gulden a year. After Luther married, he and Katie also offered students shelter in their homes. When the students could not pay, they worked their way through, as students do today. Among these latter was Jerome Weller, who came about 1529 as a student at the university and also as a tutor to the Luther children. His brother Peter came in 1530 and stayed until 1538. 10 other student tutors lived with the Luthers in the following years. Two young noblemen of Bohemia, Heinrich Perknowski and Count Borzevog of Dohna, took board and room with the Luthers in the 1530s. The latter's father, Count Frederick II of Dohna, thanked Luther, expressing his, quote, "great happiness at having his boy at Kate's table." This young Bohemian nobleman was sponsor for Martin Luther, Jr. in 1531. Anton Lauterbach boarded with the Luthers also in 1531, and 2 years later served at the baptismal dinner for Paul Luther and also celebrated his own wedding banquet at the Luther house. Orifaber was a table companion of Luther for the last years of Luther's life. And Luther also provided a refuge for pastors and other Protestants who were escaping from prison in Roman Catholic countries. In addition, they fed messengers of princes as they passed through Wittenberg. Martin Luther even sheltered a very repentant Karlstadt in his home shortly after Luther's own marriage. Katie Luther took responsibility for these boarders and roomers. She kept the accounts and made the arrangements with them. In 1538, Luther wrote to Caspar Miller of Mansfield that he could not accommodate another student in his table. "But if one becomes vacant, as may happen after Easter, I'll gladly show my goodwill, providing Lord Kate will be gracious to me." The refuge of Luther's home helped many. Luther gave shelter to the humanist Agricola, his wife, and 9 children for several months in 1536. Many of the guests were musical and helped with Luther's hymnal. They sang and made music in the Luther house. Among these were Elizabeth von Meseritz, who helped write the first hymnal, and Matthias Weller was an organist. John Jeffels, a jolly welcome guest who showed much pleasant friendship with his music. Luther also gave refuge to Elsie von Kannitz, one of the nuns of Katie's former convent at Nimstein, saying, "With me you are to be at home and at table. You shall have no danger nor worry. So I beg you now not to refuse me this." And the Elector of Saxony was aware of this entertaining and set specialty foods to Kate, a pike, or venison, or wine, or wild boar on special occasions. Once Kate served lunch to the Elector himself as he held court at the city wall. On another occasion, the city council of Wittenberg sent Katie Rhine wine for honorable guests. To a refugee from the Catholic elector Joachim I of Brandenburg, Luther wrote, "Myself a poor man, I have received this poor man and given shelter to the pitiful exile. Stone and rock should take pity." Even royal visitors came. The same Catholic elector of Brandenburg was told by a 14-year-old princess that his own wife, Elizabeth of Denmark, took communion in both kinds in 1527. For this Lutheran act, he drove his wife out of the house and she fled to Wittenberg. She was sick, both mentally and physically, and Katie Luther nursed her back to health with much love for 7 months. Both daughters of the sick electress visited her, but Katie Luther would not permit them to stay for long. When the sick woman was finally cured enough to leave, she offered 2 goblets filled with 100 gulden, but this was refused. At the table with the meal, Luther also dispensed much wisdom and advice, as you know. For example, Credo from Kraftheim, a boarder for 6 years, was advised not to enter the ministry. Instead, he made a brilliant career in medicine, becoming physician, despite his Lutheranism, to the Habsburg emperors Ferdinand I, Maximilian II, and Rudolf II. Not all the guests were honest. Rosina from Truchsess came to the Luther house in Wittenberg saying she was an escaped nun, and Katie took pity on her and accepted her as a boarder. But she began to steal items from the Luthers, and the town of Wittenberg began to suspect that she was a Protestant. A prostitute. When Luther confronted her with the evidence, she confessed and said her whole story was false, and she asked to be forgiven. And she was reinstated in her room, but she repeated her old ways, and Katie finally kicked her out of the house when Luther was away from Wittenberg. The best description of Luther's hospitality is in an attack on him by Duke George of Saxony, who wrote, quote, "You have opened an asylum so that all monks and nuns robbing our cloisters have with you a refuge and abode, as if Wittenberg were, so to speak, politely, a den of rogues for all reprobates in the country." And Luther commented in April 1539, "I was utterly overwhelmed by the crowds of poor people who came from far and near to an open house." We must certainly say that Luther saw the stranger and took him in. He and Katie practiced the virtue of hospitality. The home of Martin and Katie Luther was not only full of love and full of people, the Black Cloister in Wittenberg was also a big place. This building housed the Augustinian monks in Wittenberg from the founding of the university in 1502 when construction began. The oldest parts of the house were no older than 23 years when they were married, and the 3-story structure itself had only recently been completed. It measured 45 feet by 165 feet, and I estimate the floor space of 3 floors at 20,000 square feet of floor space. Luther himself had lived in this building since first coming to Wittenberg, first as a monk and also after he'd renounced his monastic vows. The Elector of Saxony, Frederick the Wise, gave the building to Martin and Katie Luther as a wedding present, and they continued living in it throughout their married life. The property was to be tax exempt so long as they lived there, and if sold, the University of Wittenberg was given right of first refusal. The first floor contained a supply rooms and a kitchen, and also the monastic sleeping room, which became a student's refectory. The second floor became living quarters for the Luther family, including the reception room, Luther's study, the family room, 3 bedrooms, and a little tower room. The third floor was probably made into additional rooms to accommodate the extended family and house guests of Luther's time. The large lecture hall, where Luther met many of his classes, today measures 25 by 70 feet. That's something like this room, perhaps, a little wider. And there were also a smaller lecture hall. After the mid-16th century, this building was used by the University of Wittenberg and other structures were added to it. The building itself in Luther's time was set back from the street, and the street entrance was flanked by 2 gatehouses and a fence. Today these are replaced by large structures of the university, but the courtyard still remains. The door into the house from the courtyard was rebuilt into an elegant entrance portal. Katie Luther had this doorway built in 1540 for her husband's birthday. It frames the entrance and accommodates two seats on either side of the lintel. The inscription carved into the Pyrenees sandstone reads still, quote, "You are 57. In silence and in hope shall my strength be." In addition to the house and gatehouses and fence, the Luther establishment also included a brewery and a stable, and behind the house was a small vegetable garden. Katie Luther also begged her husband to permit her to acquire another garden in Wittenberg through which a small stream ran to supply fish for the kitchen. In 1540, Martin and Katie Luther purchased the von Bora ancestral home at Zulsdorf. This is a farm, a journey of 2 days away from Wittenberg. And Katie Luther reigned as queen over all this vast establishment. In addition to her own family and their relatives, she had also to care for the students who boarded with her, and she entertained dinner guests. For banquets, Katie sometimes set places for 120 people. She also took care of the animals, which included, in 1542, several horses, 8 pigs, 5 cows, 9 calves, and also chickens, pigeons, geese, and the dog Telfo, which Luther expected to greet in heaven. My admiration for Katie Luther grows when the extent of her responsibilities becomes clear. She not only administered the Black Cloister in Wittenberg with its gardens, brewery, and stables, but she also ran the farm at Zulsdorf, to which she traveled sometimes for 2 weeks at a time. The cost of running this establishment was considerable, and Luther often gave tribute to Katie for her financial acumen. Luther had a small salary as a professor, and the students who boarded with them were expected to pay. Great and small also did give gifts to the Luther family because they admired them, they revered Martin Luther, and they wanted to thank him for their spiritual help and sometimes for Luther's practical and material assistance. Often, however, these thanks came not in the form of cash, but as goblets, belts, chains, or medals. These sometimes had to be sold if they were not placed, like wedding gifts, on a shelf. After Martin's death, the elector allowed Katie to live in the Black Cloister until her death, if she wished. He also gave her an endowment and helped to purchase another farm to benefit the Luther children. The princes of Anhalt, in whose service Luther was at Mansfeld when he died, promised to pay her 2,000 gulden, but she had only received 1,000 at her death. She had the gift of knowing how to manage money wisely. Luther's wife not only took care of the ills of the house, but she also doctored the people living in it. For example, in 1532, she nursed one of her boarders, John Zink of Nuremberg, for a month, while she also was nursing the leg wound of her husband. 2 years later, one of the students caught the measles, and she nursed him. 10 years later, at Easter, 2 boarders died in an epidemic of measles in which all the children, Luther children, caught the disease also. In the winter of 1539-40, the plague, was it the bubonic plague, raged in Saxony. Children deserted their parents. The houses of those who died were torn down, and the country people were afraid to bring their produce to town for fear of the plague. Food prices rose to tremendous heights. Luther borrowed grain from the elector and gave it to the poor. As a pastor, he also visited the sick. One of the professors of Wittenberg, Sebald Münster, took the plague in his household. His wife died, and then Katie Luther nursed the man and his 4 remaining children in her home. As a result, Katie Luther also became very ill. For 4 days in January of 1540, she lay like a corpse. Her husband at her bedside prayed the Lord's Prayer for her, and Melanchthon wrote to friends outside Wittenberg to pray for her recovery. By the end of January, she was up and around again, but she was not completely recovered until April. As human beings, Martin and Katie Luther experienced the sorrow of the loss of loved ones. Their second child, the infant Elizabeth, died before her first birthday. The next year, Luther's father became ill and passed away in May of 1530. In June 1531, Luther's mother died. The greatest sorrow for the Luther family, however, seems to have been the illness and the death of little Magdalena in 1542, at the age of 13. Her illness was so serious that her older brother Hans was summoned home from Torgau. Martin tried to comfort his wife by saying, "Dear Kathy, remember where she came from. She's faring well." But on September 20th, as she lay dying in her father's arms, Martin asked her if she was willing to go to her father above, and she answered, quote, "Yes, dear father, just as God wills," and she closed her eyes. Katie Luther's biggest patient, however, was her husband. This is not the place to recite all his illnesses and their cures, but we do know that on several occasions he suffered terribly from kidney or gallstones. He became so ill at Small Calden in 1537 that he dictated a will saying, among other things, quote, "Comfort my Kate, that she may bear this for having lived happily with me for 12 years. She has served me not only as a wife, but also as a servant. God reward her. But you are to care for her and her children as it is fit. I love my Kate. Yes, I love her more than myself. That is really true. I would die rather than that she and the children should die." Luther suffered other illnesses, and on his last journey to Mansfield in the winter of 1546, he was accompanied by his two younger sons. And when he died in Mansfield, his dear wife was not with him. In conclusion, we have seen that the home of Martin and Katie Luther was full of mutual love, that they opened their home to relatives, to students, and to friends, and that the house itself and its surroundings were large and complex, and Frau Luther managed them well. And finally, that Katie Luther nursed her large and extended family in sickness and in health. Tributes have been given to the Lutheran parsonage by Protestant and Catholic scholars alike. For example, Philip Schaff, the 19th century Protestant church historian, paid tribute to the Lutheran parsonage by saying that the domestic life of Luther is one of the factors of modern civilization. And also Jules Michelet, the French Catholic historian of the Romantic era, said, "What family more holy, what home more pure? Holy, hospitable table where I myself have been a long time a guest, and have found so many divine fruits on which my heart lives," and so on and so on. We may conclude that Luther's family life stands as an example to all. The risks and evils of clerical celibacy have been replaced by the exemplar family life of the Protestant clergy, where duties and the virtues of family life are practiced. And Philip Schaff said, "It has been proved that a larger proportion of able and useful men and women have been born and raised in households of Protestant pastors during the last 300 years than any other class of society. Luther deserves to be honored as a benefactor of mankind by founding the Protestant parsonage." Thank you. And I should be happy to entertain questions, as I understand I may not be able to answer them, but if anybody has any, yes. I'm not good at numbers. Is someone else better at numbers than I am? Let me give you the figures here. Does anybody, what was it, 145 feet long? And yes. 20,000, I had my son, who was a mathematician, figured out, we figured 20,000 square feet of living space. Now this would be, if you subtract the walls, which were much thicker then than they are now, this would be probably the living space of, 4, 5, 8-room houses. But remember, they lived mostly on the second floor. The first floor was the kitchen and the storeroom, but the second floor was where they lived. It was tremendous. Yes?
Around the home with entertaining and taking care of the home and taking care of the sick. It almost sounds like they didn't have time to insight for each other. Is that the case? Or did they have to find time to be together with other than the life?
I don't have a day-to-day account of Luther's life, but I feel from the quotations of Martin Luther's writings that he depended much on her and that they were together in many times. These little bits of quotations which I have given should show you that it seems that there were many times that they were together, but also, and I think that they together served the guests. For example, a dinner time was a time when they were both together serving the whole family, the whole extended family, and they were talking together. And his tributes to her suggest that they weren't strangers to each other. It's not like you sometimes hear a friend will say, well, I haven't talked to my husband in 3 days. I don't think that was the case in this family, but I don't know. Other questions? Yes?
I don't know exactly what conditions were back then for people hosting, I mean, for like nobility hosting other people coming around and everything. Was Martin Luther's home almost totally unique in that no other families really hosted like he did, or was that somewhat common among some of the other people or maybe noble people?
As I understand it, the great houses of the 16th century were places where many people would come. A noble, of course, Martin Luther wasn't a nobleman, but he had a position of social leadership in that community, certainly. He was probably the biggest man in Wittenberg. And noblemen households always were very, very large establishments. Some years ago, in preparing it, to teach a class on the papacy of Avignon, I counted the number of household servants that the popes of Avignon had, and I believe the number came to 250 in his own private palace in Avignon alone. And therefore, there were many people around the pope who was, of course, unique, but a smaller man such as the Elector of Saxony would also have to entertain many, and the castles were places of staying. It was usually, I'm sure, more comfortable to stay in a castle with a private home than to have to stay in a public inn somewhere. Next friend?
I've always wondered what the outcome of that letter he wrote to the little hot was. I've always wondered whether Hans would come to him and say, I have prayed, I have studied, I have been very good, where's your God?
No, I don't have any information. I can suggest that Hans did do a lot of praying and studying. Wasn't he the physician after he grew up? There was one, I think the oldest son became a physician and one of the other sons was a lawyer and one was a theologian, I'm not sure. So this indicates that they did plenty of studying. I didn't read because I didn't track it down, Luther's letter about the death of the dog to his son, in which he enters also into the childhood fantasy. I wish I knew. I don't know the answer to that one. Any other? Yes, Addie? I got this from a number of different sources. I think probably the simplest and easiest, but it doesn't have it all, is the chapter in Roland Bacon's Women of the Reformation. He's got a very good chapter there that you could start on, and then he would give you suggestions as to where to go from there. Yes?
Was the house of Philip Melanchthon anything like Luther's?
Melanchthon's house was large, but not as large as Luther's. But I have a quotation, I didn't bring it with me, that Melanchthon said at one time, At my dinner table, there was spoken Latin and Greek and Turkish and German and French and Italian and modern Greek and Arabic. And he said, and there were a couple other languages, and he said, I don't know how many languages there were spoken at Lucy's table. So Melanchthon also entertained a number of people as a professor, and he would board and room students who would come. I would imagine the most noble students would go with Luther, and he would have the pick of the crop because of his position, yes?
This morning, Dr. Cole mentioned that Luther was not very excited about disciplining and spanking his children. In Luther's household, who did the majority of the discipline, Katie or Martin, and which one was harsher?
I don't have evidence to answer your question. I really have not seen any specific evidence on this issue. I'd hate to pass judgment on the family, on one or the other members of them. I would say it's implied for me by Katie Luther's other actions that she was a pretty strict disciplinarian, but I have no evidence for that. Remember, she kicked out this thieving prostitute who was there. And she wouldn't permit her husband to board too many people at her house. She had to wait a while. And so I guess maybe she did, but I think Luther was a powerful enough individual as a person to instill respect and obedience in his children. Remember, he insisted his wife should be obedient, too. He said she was more obedient than he expected.
Yes.
And with that, that's true. That's true. And it was also remarkable that of the six children she bore, four of them grew to adulthood, and a fifth grew to the age of 13. This is a very good percentage for infant mortality in the 16th century. It's surprising that they had so many, and they must have given thanks to God many times for having permitted so many children to live. This was unusual. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it. And let's all go and do likewise. I don't think I can serve 120, though.